Kane is in the building.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Threepeat Podcast. I am here. Well, before I get into my name, episode 13 of season 9. Got to get that in. I'm your host for the evening, Stephen Benazzo, and I'm greatly pleasured to be joined alongside
Josh Romowitz,
DJ Hummel,
and Alex Castle.
Yeah, I'm rushing things. You know, I'm rushing, you know, the episodes. I'm just like, because I got an, you know, I got what I want to talk about tonight. You know, I'm riding high, and not because of the holiday that was in late April. I didn't need any recreational activities to get me feeling good.
I'm still riding high from that holiday.
TG's still riding high with him, and he probably will for the rest of the month and maybe possibly the rest of the year. But I had the NFL draft helping me ride high. You know, we got the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, helping me and helping us ride high. So we're feeling good. If you're a sports fan, you got to be feeling good. Especially me, because the Chicago Bears just absolutely nailed the 2024 NFL draft. I mean, like, you know, it couldn't have gone much better than it went for us. You know, Framus will probably say otherwise. He'll try to, you know, be a party pooper and you know, shit on it and try to step on it, you know, and but no, we ain't going to let you. We ain't going to let you because, you know what? We got our new quarterback. We got a new weapon. We got now possibly the best punter in the league. And we got a guy off the edge who could turn into something pretty special and helps fill a position of need. So let's talk about the draft. Obviously, we've already kind of been talking about it, but the Bears, you know, got the they did what everyone kind of expected them to. They didn't pull out any tricks. They didn't trade the pick like last year. They did the right thing. They took Caleb Williams, number one. Romans is acting like it's a bad move, even though deep down he's scared. He's nervous. He's sweating. even though he's in a whole nother conference and a whole nother division, but he's still sweating. He doesn't want to see my team do good. He knows they're coming. The Bears are coming. You know, we got the Bear Claw, Caleb Williams with the Bear Claw. Arr, you know, and they're more like a grr. And then, and Roma Dunze, man, you know, I'm sure the Jets probably
that's the one I am mad about. That was,
yeah. So, I mean, listen, and we're going to get into your drafts, boys, but, you know, I mean, to pair Roma Dunze with Caleb Williams, I tell you, that last week, I was a very, very.
I will say, though. Sorry to cut you off, but
hey, you're all good.
I've had enough of this nonsense. I do think the NFL needs to do some sort of investigating because the Tuesday, I guess it was, leading up to the draft, because the draft was Thursday. So Tuesday leading into the draft, there was the tweet of Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze on the same flight together. I forgot who tweeted. I think was it Caleb saying that Rome is flying the plane or whatever?
Caleb did say that, yeah.
So that's got to be some sort of like tampering that the league needs to investigate because it's no coincidence.
But it's not like, I mean, okay, I will say like it could be, but at the same time, so in the fact that when they were training together, it was actually, I forgot, I saw this story. It wasn't the Bears didn't like orchestrate it. It was, I mean, granted, the Bears already knew they were taking Caleb. That was, everyone knew that, you know? So obviously, Caleb could kind of train with whoever he wants. So if he wants to train with Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, which hence would be his future teammates, they could do that, you know? But the Roma Dunze thing was, I forgot, someone's like agent, or not agent, like someone connected with the league told Rome, like, yo, Rome, like, go out and start, like, you know, if you have the possibility to play with these guys, like, get out and, like, you know, train with them and just kind of, like, you know, see what's going on out there and, like, you know, because, I mean, everyone kind of knew how the draft would kind of, like, ball. Like, they figured Caleb would go one. You know, Daniels may 2-3. Four, a lot of people thought maybe the Cardinals would trade out, but probably take Marv. Five, the Chargers would either trade out for a QB needy team or they'd take Joe Alt, which they did. And then the Giants at six would probably either take the next receiver or a QB, and they stayed put and took a receiver. And then I guess you could have went either between Dunze or Neighbors, but Neighbors was getting a lot of hyped, so they took Neighbors. And then we knew the Titans were not going to take a receiver. And then the Falcons, I mean, that was just a crazy pick.
Yeah, that's really – I would say that is really when the draft started because – yeah, I mean, there were rumors and people, a lot of speculation that, okay, the Giants can take a quarterback. Okay, the Vikings could trade up, which they eventually did, but the Vikings could trade up to take J.J. McCarthy at four or whatever. But the draft really started with the Falcons because all the talk was they're taking an edge, Dallas Turner from Alabama, and they take Michael Penix. And that's the perfect alley-oop for the Bears, who are right behind them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He just fell. So it was like, because the Bears, supposedly Ryan Pohl said he wanted to move up, but his, you know, Ian Cunningham, our assistant GM, and everyone just said, just let's see how the board plays out, and played out in our favor. But I could see how it seems a little suspicious, but I think it just kind of, the Bears were confident where, you know, how things would play out. It did play on their favor. So, but this is a franchise changing draft for the Bears,
and
for sure.
Obviously, it's all hypothetical, but just from being a part of like Bears Twitter, Bears whatever, hypothetically, if Roma Dunze wasn't there at number nine, I don't think the Falcons need a receiver, but in this hypothetical, if he was taken by the Falcons instead of Michael Penix, which could have filled a better need anyway right now, what would the Bears have done at number nine?
I think they would have traded down. I definitely think they would have traded down. Because really, like, maybe they could have taken Dallas Turner right there, but, you know, from the interviews and stuff and from Ryan Pohl's interview, like, Dunze was their top guy. So I think if Dunze was taken, that would have threw them in a loop, and I think they definitely would have been because he said that there was offers, you know, they were seeing what it would take to move up. They had offers to move down, and so clearly Roman's their top guy. So when he was there, that was an easy decision. But yeah, like you said, if he was taken, or say if the Jets jumped the Bears with Atlanta,
they were everything I was seeing. They weren't going to trade up
to get him. If he fell, he fell.
They were like, yeah. They were going to trade down or stay put. They were not going to trade up.
So, but now let's talk about the Jets. You know, because listen, everyone kind of knows the Bears. Like, regardless of what happened, I mean, on paper, it's a win-win. You hope that Caleb is the guy. There's just something different about Caleb than every other quarterback that's been taken. Even Fields, I hate to admit. So I really think that this is the turn of something special, and that this really will go down as, you know, an iconic class that the Bears franchise, fans, coaches, players will, you know, won't forget. But we'll go to the Jets, and then we'll go to the Giants. You know, because the Giants one might be not iffy, but like, you know, there's more, a little more depth to the
Giants.
There's
a lot more to discuss with the Giants draft.
Yes. Then, you know,
made later in the draft with rounds 3-6.
Yes. So the Jets is pretty simple. You know, supposedly Rome was, you know, he was a target, but you move down with the Vikings, and like that fun, that video, which I love those types of videos, behind the scenes in the draft room, and Joe Douglas working the phones, and pretty much you trade down with Minnesota, you get all those free picks, and like Salah said, free money. Why wouldn't you do that? You know they're taking JJ. They're not taking the guy that you want. So you get all those extra picks. You still get Fashanu, you know, one of the top tackles. You know, he was the second tackle taken, really, really high potential. That might have been actually another pick that the Bears made. Maybe they would have taken a little because he was teammates.
That's why I was asking the question, because I was wondering if you would take our pick, because it seemed like the Brock Bowers narrative was a smokescreen, which is fascinating.
I was surprised about that
because there was a lot of talk, and it seemed like Joe Douglas kind of played into it. But that apparently he was never really on the Jets board, which I guess it makes sense. You already have Tyler Conklin. You address the tight end position in the previous two drafts. You have Jeremy Ruckert from Ohio State and Zach Kuntz, who they drafted last year, who was one of the steals of the combine because he's a 6'8 freak show.
And Rogers said that he got a lot of work in with Kuntz and really started developing a good chemistry.
Yeah, because he was working with the practice squad guys. So a little breakdown of the Jets draft. It's very simple, and basically it went as predicted. You got your franchise left tackle, probably won't even need to start this year with Tyron Smith. Perfect guy to mentor him. Olu said he models his game after Tyron Smith. Perfect fit. No complaints there. Obviously, my Penn State bias loves that pick. It would have been great to take Brock Bowers, obviously, but I think it's a better long-term fit and need because we know the O-line issues that the Jets have had. So now you have Olu, you have AVT, you have Tippmann as your cornerstone young guys to build around for years to come. My favorite draft pick, I'm torn because in the later rounds, they had so many good picks. Me and you were talking because they took your guy, Braylon Allen, the youngest kid in the draft. The more I read into it, the more I'm excited because it seems like the perfect thunder and lightning running back room with him and Breece Hall. You have Breece Lightning. You have Braylon Allen, who, yes, he's young, but he's so explosive and runs angry. It's sort of similar to how Green Bay used A.J. Dillon, A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. I'm torn though because Malachi Corley, a lot of people are saying he's a sleeper, he's a name to watch, and all the things I've been seeing are positive. He's gonna fit the slot perfectly, mini Debo-esque, but I can't not shout out the pick that I projected was going to happen, landed in our laps. I think we traded up for him. And that is Jordan Travis, Florida State quarterback. I am surprised that he fell to the fifth round. I thought it would be like third or fourth round. Teams would start calling, but he was the second quarterback taken on day three. It was who was taken before him? Why am I drawing a blank? Spencer Rattler to the Saints.
Rattler.
And then Jordan Travis. Both of those pretty big names, older quarterbacks, though. And Jordan Travis, the fit to the Jets just makes way too much sense. Recovering from a fractured ankle, has time to develop and rest, don't need to be rushed, and learn and watch how Aaron Rodgers goes about his business. Brought in Tyrod Taylor to be the backup, and you address your franchise quarterback for years to come. Unlike the Falcons wasting their first pick on a quarterback the same age as Jordan Travis, because they're both older quarterbacks, Penix and Jordan Travis, the Jets were able to fill immediate needs in the earlier rounds and then get Jordan Travis. So that was probably my favorite pick because it was the pick that I've been wanting for a while, and to see it actually come to fruition. Obviously, you expected Caleb Williams, and I'm sure it's the same feeling, but for the Jets to be able to do this in the fifth round, it's very exciting.
No, it's exciting when the Bears pick that I, besides, like I said, I kind of knew Caleb was going to happen, and Adunze really got me hyped, but I saw a lot of mocks with Adunze, so I was like, I wasn't shocked when they took him. I was just really happy that he was available and that they did. But the pick that really got me excited was that Torrey Taylor pick, the punter from Iowa, because I remember watching a lot of Iowa games, you know, with just watching Big Ten against Wisconsin, and especially when they played Wisconsin. I'm like, this kid was just putting the ball inside the five, like, every time he punted. And I'm like, who the hell is this kid? And then I just kept watching highlights of him, and I'm like, our punting sucks. I'm like, the Bears need, like, a way to get this guy, because no offense to Trent Gill, like, he was a good character, personality, like part energy, but he just was not good at punting, at least in the NFL. And now, like, and I'm telling you, like, special teams, punters and kickers are dangerous weapons. If you got a really good kicker like Tucker, we know that's good. If you got a really good punter like Johnny Hecker was back in the day, Thomas Morstead, like.
And now think about the rule change. He might be needed for kickoffs, and special teams are not necessarily a joke anymore. There's going to be a lot more strategy going forward with the XFL rule change. So that was a really good pick.
And some people are like, oh, why did they take him in the fourth round? One, we had limited picks. And two, like, dude, if he's a superstar punter and, like, changes the – like, who are we going to – like, whatever we get at that position is going to be a developmental, like, guy that probably won't even pan out. He should be legit, you know? So, like,
they already cut Gil. So,
yeah, they did.
He is
the only
punter on their roster now.
Yeah, you know, so I loved it. But you know, I really did like the Jets draft. And you know what, from it's like same with like the O-lineman compared to Brock Bowers. Like last year, you know, when we took Darnell Wright, like I knew that this year would probably be the quarterback year, the more fun year, like the sexy picks, you know? But you need those trench picks. You need those lineman picks, you know, and Darnell Wright was kind of like a saving grace on our line. And I think maybe not so much for you for this year, Olu, unless one of Tyron Smith is older now and he had injury year last year with Dallas. You know, Morgan Moses is also older. So these guys, you know, they're a little battled. So if they go down, at least you know you could trust Olu going in there and holding himself up compared to some guy that, like, you know, is just not really the best and most trustworthy player to have, especially with Rodgers coming off a torn Achilles. But, yeah, and then if he turns into your franchise left tackle, I mean, that's one of the most important positions to have in football, like locked up. So that was a great pick. Obviously, you know, guys like Malachi Corley and Braylon Allen, I mean, they're just going to add more depth and more pieces to your offense. Just, and they bring that little, you know, like they bring that physicality. Like they don't go down on contact. They're explosive. Just gives Rodgers more weapons and gives guys more, you know, like, guy like Mike Williams, you don't have to throw him out every single play. Granted, Mike Williams is on the outside, but, you know, he doesn't feel like he has to be he's not going to have to be like
Garrett Wilson won't see as many double teams because you'll have to actually guard the slot receiver. You won't have to throw out Alan Lazard every single drive or at all.
Exactly. You know, and then, and plus we know Rodgers, he likes his slot little guys, you know, Randall Cobb for all those years. And this guy is like, say, I mean, Randall Cobb was disgusting for the Packers back in his day, and with him and Rodgers had that, unbelievable connection. So if Corley's more like a Debo, and you have a little Debo Randall Cobb like in one, I mean, that is just absurd. So yeah, no, really good draft for the Jets. I know Joe Douglas was probably very satisfied, happy. Robert Saleh now with Saleh, it's like, listen, you got the pieces, you know. Hopefully, barring any like no injuries, like. They got to put it together now. You know, this is the year now. Like, it's where they made, you know, he got you your moves on the line. He made, you know, he drafted it. He kept getting them weapons. You know, he got the quarterback. Defense was already kind of there, you know. So it's like, there's nothing else. Now it's just, let's see results. Let's produce the results. But I think good things are coming to the Jets side of MetLife. The Giants side of MetLife, you know, I think we're still floating that idea. Obviously, a lot of people thought quarterback. We know Joe Shane was aggressive trying to trade up with the Pats. The Pats stayed pat, you know, no pun intended. But, you know, Joe trying to make his move. But you know what? He settled for Malik Nabers. And here's the thing. I think it was a great pick. And you need a legit weapon. You need a 1,000-yard. You haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since, like, Odell left, which is, like, shameful. Like, that's bad. So, and I can't talk too much because the Bears, like, besides, well, we had Darnell Mooney a couple years ago, but the Bears usually in kind of that predicament too. You know, these, especially now in a quarterback-driven league, you need a guy who can get you 1,000 yards. And Malik Nabers is definitely going to be that guy. So a lot of people are saying, well, who's going to throw to him? Well, listen, if you drafted one of the quarterbacks, who are they going to throw to? So it was either you're going to get your guy, but they're not going to have the best weapons to throw to, or you'll get your weapon, but then they're not going to have the most, you know, trustworthy guys to throw to them. So that's why the Giants are kind of in this little, like, you know, they're in their little rebuild. And it was tough for the – and I think the biggest part with the Giants is that what's setting them back is they're not fully committing to the rebuild, because the first year they made the playoffs, won the playoff game. Last year took a drastic step back, but won those games towards the end of the season that really, if they lost, would have been in the position to draft Drake May. But Tommy Cutlets had his little, you know, run on Chicken Parm, and, you know, everyone was loving it. But, you know, so listen, you got Malik Nabers, A-plus pick. The dude's going to be a dog in the league. He's got the dog mentality. He's going to be a dog in this league. He could turn into one of the best receivers in the league. So I like it. So are you guys glad that they went receiver over trying to force the quarterback? Because you could have taken JJ, but are you glad they took Malik instead of trying to force JJ? Because JJ's got the size. Like, I think JJ will be a good NFL quarterback. Is he going to change a franchise? I don't know. Like, the Vikings is the perfect situation for him. With the Giants, would he have been able to do that? I don't know. So are you guys glad that they went weapon? Are you glad with the weapon they went with and that they didn't take a quarterback? Because pretty much it was just JJ, and then it wasn't until it was Penix and JJ, and then that they passed up on, and then obviously Penix went 8, and then Vikings moved up to 10 for JJ. So I want to hear your
or even Bo. You could throw in Bo Nix to that combo too.
Or Bo, yeah, because then Bo went to 12 to Denver, so.
I don't think the Giants legitimately had any interest in any other quarterback but Drake May. From what I've seen, from what I've listened to post-draft, I think it was either Drake May or no quarterback. And I'm totally okay with that. You know, I tried to educate myself more on McCarthy, listen to what you guys as bigger college fans said. And, you know, like I had told Josh and some other people, that pick I would have not been happy about, but I wouldn't have made a full evaluation of it until next season. And I think we handled the first round well. I really do. You know, we offered the Patriots a lot. I mean, the Patriots were offered a lot in general. I mean, Minnesota offered both of their first round picks this year and their first round pick next year. The Giants offered 2 first round picks, a second rounder, a third rounder, and at the last minute, we offered our 4th round pick, and the Patriots still turned that down. So I think it was kind of a blessing in disguise, because that's a lot to put on the shoulders of a rookie quarterback who, like you pointed out, Stevie, and this was my mentality. Okay, you draft Drake May, but who's he going to be throwing to? Now you get a guy like Malik Nabers, who 6 foot, 200 pounds. The dude can just run like so smoothly. It's unreal. Like, and the thing that Dave's talked about was layers with him. He can beat you, you know, in the short game. He can meet you in, you know, the middle of the field. And we know what he can do in the deep game. So he's someone that can really open up the field and allow these other guys like Slayton, if we can figure out the contract situation, Jalin Hyatt, Wandale Robinson, allow these guys to get more opportunities, because everyone's going to be focusing on Nabers now. That's not to say, well, everyone's going to be double teaming him and he's going to do nothing. Yeah, he's going to have his, you know, fair share of competition, especially when you look at, you know, the Cowboys and the Eagles and look at their secondary. But you're adding a guy that's explosive. And like you said, we haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since Odell. So I'm very happy with the pick.
2018 specifically was the last time we had Odell. And he went over 1,000 yards with 1,052.
Which is crazy. So, you know,
it was Slayton last year with 770.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and the fact that he's been our leading receiver says a lot. So I'm excited about the pick. I was more in favor of Rome, but I think what the Giants are looking for and what they've been, you know, drafting and the type of guys they've been going in to get in the offseason, he definitely fits the mold for that. So I am happy with that. I'm going to touch on one other pick. I'm not going to go over each of them because I want TJ to elaborate on some. So the other pick I'm going to go over, which was probably my second favorite pick. It's tough, but and that's Theo Johnson. I am so excited that we got him. Waller's is gone. I mean, I would say that there's a very slim percent chance that he comes back. He's got a lot going on in his personal life. I don't think he's physically there anymore to continue to compete. Theo Johnson is a tough tight end. He's got great hands. He's got good route running ability. He can block. I'm really excited what he's going to bring. You pair him with Daniel Bellinger, and I think that's two more guys that Daniel Jones is going to throw to. And that's the other thing, too, is that Jones is going to be the quarterback. Doesn't matter what anyone says. He is going to be the quarterback. So buckle up, Giants fans, because that's who's going to be throwing the ball. And we've added some nice pieces. Really excited for Theo Johnson. And I'm sure TJ now, you know, will give his take, but left the door open for him to touch upon the other two top four picks.
We got to push the Drew Lock propaganda. Drew Lock 2024. Yeah,
I just want to say that one thing, too, is that, you know, John Schneider made that comment during that radio interview. I think it was out of spite because I think Seattle really wanted him back. And I saw this amongst Giants Twitter, and I think it was worded perfectly. Two things. One, has Drew Lock ever proven that he can be a starting quarterback in this league? I think we can all agree that no. He can command games. He can play in the spotlight when he needs to, which we saw a little bit last year, but he's not a starting caliber quarterback. Two, unless he has an unprecedented summer and camp and is killing it in preseason, he's going to be the backup. So
if Jones isn't ready, though.
Yes, that's totally different. If Jones isn't ready, if he's not physically ready, then he will be the starting guy, which frankly, I would be excited about. I'm glad that he's part of our quarterback room. You know, granted, you know, he hasn't had as much experience as Tyrod Taylor, which great, great move for the Jets because you need a guy like him with experience. And I think he's got a little more durability these last few years than he has been. So I'm excited for Locke, but my mentality is this is his last year playing starting quarterback for the Giants. We've given him more guys to work with, whether it's star caliber or guys who can work their way up. Let's see what he can do when he's fully recovered. So that's my take on the whole Drew Lock narrative.
Well, because I, you know, talking to my brother and seeing some Giants online, Twitter online, they're almost saying they kind of know that it seems like 2025 is going to be the year. Like so this year was the year for the quarterback for the Bears. Like, regardless of what happened, Olsen was kind of set. This was the year he was going to reset at QB, get his guy. You know, Shane and Dable now, this is going to be their third year, and they still haven't gotten their guy at QB. You know, they were kind of had their hands tied last year when they paid Jones because he kind of had to. But I'm assuming, you know, for their sake, for their job security, they want to get their guy. So Daniel Jones has that injury clause. So if you send him out there and he gets injured, you know, you have to owe him the rest of that money in his contract.
It's like the Russell Wilson scenario, but I think it's also in the same sense where if we bench him or no, you're right. You're right. So if we play him and he gets hurt, which was why Denver benched him. So
yeah
it's definitely a risk in that sense too, but also how bad is that going to look? I mean, if they go into the season and they bench him right away, or if they don't give him at least 7 games and they bench him, then this brass is in deep trouble. And I don't want to see that because I really like this head coach GM combo. I think they've had an unlucky start. I think that as exciting as it was, I think last season or 2 seasons ago now, I guess you could say, I think it hurt the rebuild of this team because everyone was you know, blinded by the second half of the season and beating Kirk Cousins in the playoffs. That wasn't the reality of this team. I think that was just, frankly, I think that was just luck and momentum. And yeah, you'll throw in some good coaching in there, but that talent, we have less, we have more talent now. Well, you take Saquon out of the equation, but in terms of the offensive line and some of the receiving guys, you have more talent now. So it just hurts. But you're right, Stevie. And, you know, that is the big question, too, is that what will happen with this combo? They don't have their guy. You know, the rumblings of the quarterback situation in the draft next year is not promising. So this is a really big year. And I think even though they will probably get rid of him at the end of the year, I think if the Giants can at least win enough games to fight for the wild card, not saying that this is going to happen, but I think if they can at least win enough games to fight for the wild card, I think that'll be a little bit of a saving grace for this combo, because at least they can say, we improved the offensive line more. We've given Daniel some more explosive guys. So maybe, you know, now we can actually give these guys an opportunity to draft someone. But anything can happen. I know a lot of Giants fans are pissed that we didn't get a quarterback. But I think at the end of the day, it was kind of just how the cards, you know, played out. And that's what we needed to do. And there's no regrets.
And I will say this before TJ, I let you, you know, talk Giants. This is going to be a very hot take, but I think the Giants' offense will be better without Saquon Barkley, because yes, Saquon carried the team, but everyone knew what the Giants were going to do. Gave it to Saquon in some capacity. Now the Giants don't have that option to rely on. They are forced to spread the ball out to now Neighbors, to Wandale, to your running back committee now of, you know, Devin Singletary, Eric Gray, you know, Tyrone Tracy, the rookie you just drafted. You know, hopefully now Hyatt gets used more, the tight ends. Like, now you actually have to kind of create a functioning offense or else you really won't do anything. Well, before, you know, it was just like, rely Saquon, you know, but you were kind of one-dimensional because all you had was Saquon. So teams were kind of new, like, it's pretty much going to Saquon. And occasionally, you know, Slayton would have his big catches, or Hyatt would have that big catch. Wandale, you would throw, and he'd make a little move, get, you know, 5 yards, maybe get a little first down. But you didn't really have much more than that. It was all Saquon. So I think you guys will be better off without Saquon because, like I said, now Jones actually has to process and play quarterback. And if he can't do that, then he can't play quarterback of the future. And now having a guy like Neighbors on the outside offers you that. You didn't have that before, so that's why you used Saquon as much as you did because, yeah, he was the only competent guy totally on that offense, you know. But now, hopefully, with Neighbors opening that up, now it can take, and now that Saquon's not there, now hopefully it can help a guy like Wandale, you know, spread him out a little bit, put him in motion, you know. And I guess the Giants want to use a lot of motion and have guys that are good with emotion, and everyone you have so far is good like that. So
you're going to see a lot of screens this year, that's for sure.
You know what, though? A guy like Neighbors, 4.38 speed, he can house that. You know, Wandale is small, quick, shifty, you know, tough to get. Tackle and bring down, like, he could probably do so. Like, you have the guys now, and you know, your tight ends, Theo Johnson, super athletic, you know, one of the most athletic tight end prospects coming out ever. So, yeah, let's like come up, like, create an actual offense now that you don't just sort of like, you know, you give the guy that, you know, you give the same guy the ball, you know, 40 times a game, you know, now you. You're not just one-dimensional now. And I don't know, maybe they will blow up in their face, but I really think it'll be better for the Giants calling plays and just actually just spreading things out. I think that's going to be the key thing. But TJ, I'll let you talk about some of the other picks and kind of what you thought about the Giants draft and just, yeah, your thoughts.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, Castle gave me a lot to talk about there. I want to lead off with, I think 2 years ago was not luck, was not momentum. It was a team playing up to bigger shoes than they could fill, and they filled them.
That's a better way to word it. Thank you. That is a much better way to word it. Yes.
It was a band of misfit toys that blew everybody's expectations. Like, nobody thought they were going to be that way. I didn't. You didn't. I'm pretty sure Josh and Stevie didn't. It was something that was... It's not luck. It's not momentum. It's good coaching and guys buying into a system, buying into a mentality. But that's 2 years ago. That's the past. Let's talk right now. The only pick that really had me kind of scratching my head in this draft was what they did with their third round pick. In the third round, they went corner Andrew Phillips out of Kentucky. He's not a great corner. He's okay. And he played 9 games in 2021. He played 13 in 2022 and 12 in 2023. And he really only has 10 breakups in his pass breakups in his entire college career. No interceptions, might I add. He's more so that reactionary than anticipatory kind of corner. He waits for stuff to happen. I don't know how that's gonna work out with the new DC and the new system. He's kind of like an okay college player, and it's not very often that we see okay college players be successful in the NFL. Almost at NHL there. What I would have liked was them to go and pick the player that went directly after them, and that was Christian Haynes out of UConn. That's an offensive line prospect that would have been huge for the Giants. The offensive line they've addressed in the offseason with like John Runyon Jr., Aaron Stinney, so on and so forth, but I just can't get behind rocking with Evan Neal again. That's something he's proven to me in 2 seasons with the Giants that he clearly doesn't care. He doesn't care about getting better, doesn't care about the team, doesn't care about the fans, given the interview he gave last year about fans flipping burgers and so on and what have you. I think it was a complete miss in the third round for the Giants. Granted, it's a need, and Joe Shane has been really a draft a need-based drafter. But I personally wouldn't have taken him. I would have taken him later in the draft. I think he would have fallen to fourth, fifth round, maybe even a UDFA. I just would have loved Christian Haynes out of UConn. The line is still a question to me. It's still the biggest question to me coming into the new season. They've addressed it. Now, did they address it with like day one starters? Sure, but it's more kind of depth pieces, and their one huge depth piece they had last year in Ben Bredesen, they let walk, and he signed super cheap somewhere else. And I think he's just, or they're just need-based, and it's fine drafting corner. But when the offensive line has been this bad for this long, and you had essentially a bust with Evan Neal, he hasn't proven to even get a lick better. Not even an inch better. He's awful. I personally, I don't know about you, Castle, I would have loved having an offensive line prospect drafted in this draft. The rest of the draft, I'm pretty much okay with. I love Theo Johnson. I love Neighbors in the first round. I love Tyler Newbin coming out of the second round.
Amazing pick. I'm so excited for him. He's
a ball hawk.
If all pans out well with him, the type of player he is, he'll be replacing McKinney. So very excited. You know, I didn't really give that much thought to the third pick, but I think what you said about his stock and where we could have gone with that pick, I'd have to agree. I mean, as we know from talking Giants, Haynes was a favorite with a lot of people. And I'm sure the UConn connection, you would have loved having him on Big Blue. I think at the end of the day that pick was strictly depth. You know, he's got the connection with Wandale, and Wandale's hyped to have him. So that'll be interesting to see how he takes him on in practice. That'll be a little bit of a fun test. But I think that's a valid statement on our third round pick.
I will say this, and this was a good point in favor of Shane. I think it was the ESPN broadcast when I was listening to this, and, you know, I forgot who, whatever analyst said it, but they said, like, Shane has made moves to acquire linemen. I mean, he drafted Evan Neal, he drafted John Michael Schmitz, you know, he signed all these guys. So it's not like he's never targeted the line or just like signed really cheap, not good guys or drafted linemen only in like the seventh round. It's like he has made, like, spent a lot of, like, you know, John Michael Schmitz last year was a second round pick. Evan Neal was pick number 7 in 2022 draft. And like, so it's a matter of now, like, developing these guys. You know, how come Evan, now John Michael Schmitz has looked really good at center last year, so I think he will be an anchor on that line. But how come, and that's why the Giants got the new offensive line coach, because how come they weren't being developed properly? I mean, Evan Neal, you know, in college was one of the best tackles. Looked like that dude can really anchor that whole, you know, other part of the line alongside, you know, Andrew Thomas, and you guys would have had two brick walls on the left side and the right side. And then he looks like he's the worst thing to ever come to the league at that position. So, you know, like, Choshin, he's not there to coach. He's there to make, you know, give the guys. So he spent a lot of high-quality picks on guys. But again, how come they aren't being developed to their potential? That is where the coaching comes in to play. And that's on Dable. That's on, you know, that was on your old O-line coach who clearly did a god-awful job. And so hopefully now Carmen Briscillo, right? That's his name.
Yep. And I just want to say one thing quickly on that before we move on to another team or another aspect of the draft. First of all, our line coach from last year, Bobby Johnson, is now going to be coaching the offensive line to block the number 2 overall pick. You got to laugh at that. He is the Commanders' offensive line coach. The second part, Stevie, I think a big reason why we didn't draft the line is what you just said, because we haven't drafted, developed Evan Neal well. John Michael Schmitz regressed towards the end of the year. I think the brass looked at the draft and our line situation and said, we're going to make it a priority in free agency. Let's see what Briscillo can do to develop the guys we already have. And I agree with that mentality. So that's why I don't think we went in that direction. Drafting a guy like Haynes would have been great. I would have been excited. But overall, I don't think that's why we touched any linemen in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, because it, you know, it just comes to a point where, like, you know, how many resources are you going to pull into one spot when, especially like with, you know, a higher pick like that, and then you're not getting the results. Well, you know, the Andrew Phillips at corner, you know, he might be able to go in day one and become like your slot corner, you know, and do pretty damn well. So I'd rather have that.
My thing is there, Stevie, is sure, you can put him at nickel. You know who the starting outside corner is for the Giants?
Cordell Flott. Well,
somebody who hasn't really panned out, someone who hasn't really gotten starting reps, someone who's really been a bench piece and depth piece is now automatically promoted to a starter.
It was tough too, because I think
it's tough. No way around no way around it. It was tough on Joe Shane to get his priorities right. Me personally, I think the line was and still is one of the big things to be addressed.
And that,
even
that
though
is...
they draft, even though they sign guys in free agency, those guys in free agency aren't guaranteed starters. Most of them, besides the exception of John Runyon, are probably just depth pieces. Those guys aren't starting. So why take a guy in the third round who really is just okay in college when you can take Christian Haynes that instantly addresses your problem at line with a new coach? Why not take it? And he went right after you picked. Why not address the line that has been a problem for the last 10 to 15 years and then take somebody that may or may not be an NFL caliber corner?
And you know what? That's where these GMs have tough jobs. And that's why, you know,
I'm not a GM.
Yeah. And that's why none of us are GMs. And that's why sometimes these GMs are not cut out to be GMs. But you know, we'll see how everything plays out. I mean, right now we can offer our takes and opinions. And, you know, I do think about when we interviewed David Kanter that one time after the draft. I forgot, I think, was it 2 years ago when we were saying, oh, I think, you know, this was a really good draft pick. This was a really good draft, blah, blah, blah. And to him, it was like, why is it like, you know, who know? We don't know how it's going to work out. You know, like, how do you say there's winners and losers? You know, like, these guys are, you know, you just got to wait and see them actually play. It could be the worst fit. They could be the worst player. You know, they can be a bad player in college and turn out to be a superstar in the NFL. They could be a fantastic player in college and do nothing in the NFL. So, you know, obviously we like to get into like how the analysts do and, you know, do our winners, losers rank this and that and do our little, you know, analysis on the picks and the team fits. But in reality, we just got to see these guys go out and play, and you can't just judge them after the rookie year. I think each year we now, you know, if they don't perform the first 5 weeks, we're like, oh, bust. You know, we got to stop with that. I mean, because some back in the day, guys used to sit, you know, a couple years before they would get their opportunity. Now
we'll stop with that unless it's the Bears, okay?
Well, come on. You know, but because I know if Caleb gets off to a rocky start and whatever, you know, people will probably be calling for polls and the, you know, like, so you just got to let these guys play out and give them some time. I mean, if you get a new job somewhere, like, you're not going to be, you know, where you are 5 years down the line if you're at the same job. You know, you got a lot of things to learn. You got a lot of new people to work with. No one thinks about it like that. Like, this is their job. Yeah, because they've been playing football for a long time and done really well to get to the spot. Doesn't mean, I mean, this is a whole new, like, these are the best of the best, you know? When you work at a place and you work with the best of the best people, you got to be on your A game a lot, like, pretty much all the time. And here, like, what if these guys, like, they don't get to choose where they, what atmosphere they go into, you know? So obviously they're just blessed because they're going to be making more money than they could ever possibly think of, you know, but Drake May right now with the Patriots, this is probably the worst football team he's ever played on in his life. You know, you think he's ready for this? Not at all. Not at all. You know, his head coach is a defensive guy. You know, I don't even know who his offensive coordinator is. Like, so it's going to be a big adjustment for him, you know? While a guy like J.J. McCarthy's in the kind of entering a good situation, you know, so he's kind of playing in the same kind of region. That's what I'm saying. Drake May's been living down south in Carolina his whole life. Now he's got to move to Foxborough, Massachusetts with a crappy team and try to put things together, you know, coming off a team that, you know, had one of the most successful quarterbacks of all time. A guy like J.J. McCarthy, the Vikings haven't won shit ever. So for him, he's playing in the same kind of region he's been in. He has more weapons. He's got a great coach. So for him, that might be an easier adjustment than a guy like Drake May. But regardless, you know, these guys are all in the same age realm of, you know, 21 to 23 years old. we got to just give them credit, you know, because when people first start their actual jobs, they, you know, it's, well, you know, usually you have a couple week training and then, you know, they let you take it easy. And then, you know, over time you start getting more responsibilities and then they trust you more to be, you know, do things on your own and blah, blah, blah. And then before you know it, you're doing things without even thinking. So I think the same thing calls for, you know, these players. But yeah, it was, you know, I thought the draft would be a little more exciting, a little more trades from what they hyped it up to be. It wasn't, but overall, it was still, you know, Detroit broke the record for the amount of people attending the draft. I think it was a total of 775,000 people, which is absurd. So Detroit, they do love football, and they showed out. Now next year's in Green Bay, so we'll see if those people's backyards can host, you know, close to a million people. But anyways, I love draft season. I can't believe it's already – I waited all that time, all that anticipation for it to go like that. But even though that's passed, we're still in the middle of the playoffs, NBA, NHL. We'll touch on that real quickly. We've seen some teams already in advance. TJ, your Celtics, they advance, beat the Heat, you know, pretty easily. Yeah, that one game, that was a little hiccup, but besides that, you know, you pretty much just swept them out of the arena every game. Kristaps did get hurt, though, so hopefully for the...
No walking boot today for Kristaps.
Okay, so that's a good sign. That's a good sign. So, you know, because they need him. So...
Well, clearly, last night showed that they can function pretty okay without him.
Yeah, but as you go into these later rounds and play better teams...
absolutely. As the teams get tougher, it's... You're going to need Kristaps, but if they can mesh the way they were last night... Especially with the guy who I've mentioned numerous times on this podcast that has yet to receive his flowers from the NBA. One of them I mentioned in my flu-ridden haze. The next time I mentioned him and he legitimately deserved his flowers. I've mentioned him numerous times, but Derek White has been an absolute animal. I was watching highlights and all over X today of Heat fans getting absolutely sick of Derek White because he literally balled out against the Heat. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they were just relaxing. Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, they put the team on their back. They,
you know what?
They played,
let those guys do that. Let those guys like that do that in the first round. Save Tatum and Brown for the series that you need, you know, like the conference finals, NBA finals, if you make it. Like, let guys, you know, like Devin White, Payne Pritchard, Sam Hauser.
Derek White, you fuck.
Derek White, yeah, sorry. Let these role players, guys that come off the bench, let them carry. Save Tatum, save Brown, let them kind of recover from the season which they carried. And then when you need those big boys, then you unleash them.
Even seeing when I like from guys like Jrue Holiday, who legitimately took a role cut to be with the Celtics, and he's fit in fantastically. Granted, he's not putting up like the shots and the point totals that he was putting up with the Bucks.
He doesn't have to, though.
But he doesn't have to. Exactly. He can be that role player, being a defensive pit bull like Marcus Smart was, but also being in the offensive end, moving the ball, getting guys to open looks. And like he'll still be that guy taking the ball to the hole, driving to the hoop. And like oftentimes he's driving and then kicking out to the wing and hitting Derek White or Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, even Big Al or Kristaps for a wide open three. Like it's been so much fun to watch just to watch how the Celtics play basketball. Like you love them or hate them, they're playing basketball at a fantastic level. And I know the Nets and the Knicks fans are laughing and chuckling on my screen here. But you just gotta admit it.
I mean, listen, the Celtics they're a juggernaut right now, and whoever takes them down is definitely going to have to earn it. It's not going to be by luck, right? Like, they're going to have to legitimately just beat the Celtics, beat them outright. So I know you're excited that they advanced. We'll get to your B's later on. But moving gardens to the one in New York, which Castle doesn't seem too happy about.
I need a breather. Let's get Mr. Franwitz to go over the West, and then we could circle back to me.
All right. So we won. So obviously some of the other games. Right now we got the Pacers Bucks game on. And the Pacers are currently leading. They lead the series 3-2, and they're currently winning. So we'll see how that plays out. They can clinch. You know, the Bucks have a lot of injury woes. But yeah, let's talk about the West. OKC, easy sweep for them. Looking like the number one seed. Dallas and Clippers are kind of grinding it out. Dallas took the lead last night. The Nuggets, you know, beat the Lakers, what, 4-1? 4-1. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on the West, Fromitz? What you think it's going to be a Thunder-Nuggets kind of matchup? Do you think those are looking like the two best teams? Or
so, it's interesting because remember, as the play-in, specifically for the West, people were saying, oh, the Lakers should have lost the game so they could have an easy matchup against the Thunder. Well, that was sort of right because, yes, the Nuggets outmatched them. So, in a sense, yes, all the media, the media narrative about that was semi-right for them to avoid the Nuggets because we knew what was going to happen, and that happened. But people aren't really talking about the Thunder like they should. And they steamrolled the Pelicans, swept them, and it wasn't even close. And yes, no Zion. That's a huge loss. And I think that would have made it a very competitive series. But OKC is legit. They have everything you need in a playoff team, minus the experience factor. This is the 2012 OKC where they kind of surprised everyone and all of a sudden made it to the finals when they had Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook all under 23, 24 years old. They have SGA, who's 25. They have Jalen Williams. They have Chet Holmgren, Josh Giddey, Lou Dort. That's a formidable starting five. They have shooters off the bench. They have Gordon Hayward, who is their only vet and the leader of that locker room. Mike, right? Mike Dano, is that his name? Is it Mike? His first name?
Is it Mark or Mike?
Mark. I think it's Mark. Mark Dagno won Coach of the Year.
I can look it up.
I think it was they had their best record since that OKC 2012 team. So this is a very promising team. But specifically, the reason why I wanted to talk about the West was not about the Thunder and it's not about the Nuggets. I think it's time people talk about the Timberwolves. I think the way they're built, I think they're built to go to the finals because there's not many teams that can match up with Denver and give Joker a problem because at the end of the day, they are the defending champs. That is the team. That is the team that you beat because they are the champs. So you got to beat the champs in order to get to where you want to go. And I think Minnesota is for real. You have a superstar. I think now it's safe to say Anthony Edwards is a superstar at only 22 years old. People are giving him the Kobe Bryant, young Kevin Durant comparisons. Dude went into Phoenix and embarrassed the, in quotes, the big three of Phoenix. They look like they're in complete shambles, even though a week ago everyone was putting them in finals talk conversations. They were no match. But now that Karl Anthony Towns has returned from injury, Rudy Gobert is playing at a high level. Naz Reid, they have three legit big men. No team has more than two They have three legit big men, plus Jaden McDaniels and Castle's favorite guy, Kyle Anderson, Slow-Mo. They have Mike Conley, who is the perfect leader of that locker room. It'll be interesting to see what happens with their coach, because Mike Conley collided with him and ended up tearing his ACL, so he might miss the playoffs. That could be a factor. But I think the way they played against the Suns, they could go on a very deep run. Now, it seems like no one has an answer for Anthony Edwards. He's going to get 25 points. He's going to give you high energy on both ends of the floor. Karl Anthony Towns, if he could consistently be a dominant power forward and allow Rudy Gobert to shut down the bigs, because he is the best defensive big man in the league. That Timberwolves team, I don't think the Nuggets want to see them, because that could be the team to beat them.
I think if we can kind of get a Final Four in the West of OKC, Denver, Dallas, and like Minnesota, I don't know if that's possible, but if we could.
Yeah.
That would be
right now. Dallas is up 3-2. They win. They're the last one that would advance. That's the Final Four.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're at three of the four right now.
But like, I think you're right. Minnesota's constructed well, because like, you know, when they first traded for Gobert and you're like, two centers, like that's a star you get. But no, because Gobert, he loves playing defense. He just loves being in the paint and blocking your shot and just, you know, posting, you know, like he loves living in the paint. Cat over the years now, like, he loves to shoot. He likes to step outside the line.
And it's not like he's a sniper. Like, he's a very accurate shooter.
He is, yes. So like, so now that allows, because now you don't.
And he was guarding Kevin Durant. You could trust him on a big man, on a forward, and provide good defense. He's not necessarily a mismatch on the wings anymore.
No, yeah, you can trust him guarding the 3-4 with, you know, without, like you said, worrying about like, oh boy. But so now you have Anthony Edwards, who can handle the ball. You know, Cat's there to kind of do whatever he needs to do, and then Gobert's down low, like. And it works well for them. It meshes well for them. And then they have these guys who just are, you know, like Nikhil Alexander-Walker, you know, just kind of fitting in nice. Mike Conley fitting in nice. Like, you just have all these nice complementary pieces. But I think their coach, like, being out for surgery and recovering is going to be a factor, because, like, you know, not that their assistant coaches can't get it done. And obviously, the players kind of know what works for them. But, like, you need your head coach, man, especially in the playoffs. Like, you do, like.
I kind of forgot about that, like, before I started talking. But, like, yeah, that's a bigger loss than, like.
Then everyone's just kind of, like, thinking, like, oh, my. Like, not that it's a funny situation, but, like, oh, my God, what are the odds? But I don't think people actually realize, like, you know. Like, yeah, he you know, obviously a player, like, if they had that injury, would be going to play. Like, I'm sure he can kind of coach in some capacity, like. You know, he'd probably be on a scooter, and, you know, or maybe he has, like, he's got to be careful, though, because, like, clearly guys run into that all over the, you know, like, they're in the line of fire right there. I think the West really is going to be, I mean, you got some juggernaut teams with OKC, and just their surplus of young, and not only young players, but talented players. I mean, superstars, up-and-coming stars. I mean, clearly, like, OKC, you know, they bit the bullet pretty hard there for a few years by just collecting those picks, sitting on those picks, not using all those picks to trade for a guy, just trust, you know, I mean, and obviously SGA turning into what he turned into, but just using those picks, taking top talent, and just not trying to get a guy that didn't fit. I mean, they have guys that just fit their system, guys that just, you know, blend well together. So, and we know Denver, reigning champs, we know who they are. Castle, are you ready now to talk? The Knicks had that game locked up. They had game five locked up. Just choked away. Poor execution, poor coaching. You know, listen, it's not lost yet, but it's concerning now, because now you're in Philly. Now they had momentum going back to their place.
Is there momentum, Stevie? I don't know how many Philly fans are going to be at this game tonight.
Well, they're trying to. The owner's like trying to buy tickets. They're trying to do everything in their power to prevent New Yorkers from invading Philly like they did over the weekend. We'll see if it actually works or not. But either way, you know, that game. I don't even know if the Sixers stole that game from you guys or the Knicks just blew that on themselves. Like, I don't even know how to like determine that.
I think that, well, here's the thing. I think it's a little bit of both. I think that when you have, and I'm going to give a very quick rundown of this because there's still a lot of Knicks basketball, two games left, but that is a lot of basketball. I think that the only thing that I'll say about what they did with Philly is once they allowed Maxey to make that shot, then they handed Philly the momentum for the rest of the game. When that game went into overtime, I knew that the game was cooked. But, and that's a coaching problem, but I mean, it's the same thing. And I say this every year, and every year, and I'm sick of saying it, rebounding, rebounding, rebounding. This team cannot rebound when they need to. I mean, I was watching a game of volleyball in that fourth quarter with guys slapping the ball and trying to get a rebound out of it. And it was Hart a lot of it. And Hart's been great. But yeah, when you have him missing foul shots, when you have Brunson missing foul shots, when you have sloppy passing, it all crumbles together. And that was the game to end the series. And you know what? It's a dangerous position to be in because I'll tell you this, and it pains me to say this. Now, I don't have a hatred for any other Philly team like I do with the Eagles. So I can stomach talking about the other teams a little more. Maxey is one of the most fun guys I have watched this year. I mean, the dude nearly put up 50 points. He's like what he's, I mean, when I watch him, I watch like a three-time accelerated version of Quickly. That's the first comparison that comes to mind. But if you can't slow him down and you're not dominating, you know, Embiid enough, and there's not enough defense there, this is very concerning. And they need to come in tonight and they just need to execute better. And you know what? A big part of it is DiVincenzo. He's been missing. He's a guy that when he doesn't score the way that he's been scoring, it hurts, especially when Brunson has been up and down. Now, he dropped 40 last game, which was great. But Dante is the other guard, is the other guard for a reason. We know what he's capable of. So my two keys tonight, aside from Tibbs taking notes from coaching towards the end of the game, are find ways to rebound better and get the scoring rhythm going early on. Because if it's going to be all Brunson again, that scoring, I have to say, I am very concerned for what game seven would look like because, and rightfully so, the dude is gassed. He is gassed. I looked at him last game and I said, this is someone who's carried this team on his shoulders. Now, granted, other guys have contributed. I don't want to say the team's not talented. We've talked about what this Knicks team is like. But if the Knicks want to win tonight, which they need to win, other guys need to step up and help Brunson. Because like I said, of course, we'll have the advantage game seven. But I do worry a lot about fatigue. But excited for the game tonight. Really don't know why it's at 9 o'clock. It's not favorable of my work schedule. But go New York and let's send the 25 to 20% of Philly fans who will show up to the game back to the trash cans where they crawled out of.
I like it. Obviously when the episode comes out, the game will be played out. So we'll see. You know, for next week or whatever, like how you're faring. But
if I'm bald next week, then we kind of know how.
We know why. All right. So I would have, you know, we weren't running late on time. We would talk a little hockey, but the Rangers swept the Caps, no problem, 4-0. So they advanced. The Hurricanes took care of the Islanders. So for any of the Islanders, locals, fans, sorry, but goodbye. TJ, your Bruins, you know, probably should have it. You know, the Maple Leafs are keeping it kind of interesting, but I think the Bruins, you know, they have, I guess by the time this episode comes out, the game would have happened last night, even though we're recording Thursday night, but the game's Thursday night. So we'll see how you're feeling after game six.
I mean,
shaking
hey, after,
in the boots.
After last year, I'm pretty pretty numb to pain at this point. So
back to back years of blowing 3-1 leads. That may not be the
It would suck for sure. But the stats are in favor of Boston tonight in Toronto. Toronto's 0-6 in the last 6 home playoff games. They're missing Austin Matthews.
But Boston's 0-7 in their last closeout game. So
yeah, dude,
something's got to give.
It sucks. What do you want? It sucks, all right? It sucks.
I just got to be an unbiased journalist. Got to give the
hey,
stats. That
any Rangers
Toronto.
Fans that listen to this show will have you know that Josh is very openly rooting for Toronto tonight, so you might want to check his fandom card.
Well, I would assume all of New York would root for Toronto, because then that means we're rooting against Boston. So I think all of New York
You might want to check the fandom cards.
I think all of New York would want to agree with me there. I don't know any New Yorkers that's openly rooting for Boston.
I mean, would you want to openly root for a Canadian team?
Sure.
That boos the U.S. national anthem, nonetheless?
We are now bringing patriotism into question, ladies and gentlemen.
This is something. Wow. This little, what a way to end the show here, huh? So, TJ's all fired up. Promise is instigating like normal.
It's almost like we're spitting chiclets over here.
Yeah, no, this is good. This is good. So, yeah, you know, we still got a lot of playoff hockey, playoff basketball, baseballs. You know, they're starting to get now a month in. So, yeah, it's a lot of good things going on. So, hopefully, our teams keep winning. The Yanks, Knicks, Rangers, Celtics, Bruins. You know, hopefully, all of ours, and you know, and we just enjoy it. And regardless if our teams make it or not, it's just, we'll have content some way, somehow. So I guess that's all we can ask for. So, yeah, but that's it on this week's show. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. TJ, again, shout out for you, social media, everything. Shout out to your teams. Castle, shout out to your teams. Promise, you and me really don't have that many teams going right now, but shout out to our teams that are in and
you know
playing.
To everyone's NFL teams, and hopefully everyone's draft picks pan out the way they want.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to the newly drafted.
Except if you're Atlanta, I would be disgraced if I was you.
Or if you're the Eagles or the Cowboys.
Or
good
the Packers.
Luck if you're the Commanders with Bobby Johnson.
So, but yeah, no, that's what a way to end. So thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.